Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the AfriCast. My name is Clinton. Joining me today is Robin.
Hey, how's it going?
And it's not Brendan. It's Dion.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, we're tagging in this week.
Yeah, we got a bit of a different cast, and we're going to put him right in the spotlight because he has our first bit of news today. We're going to talk about a game made in South Africa.
Yeah, it's a game called Beautiful Desolation, developed by a South African development team. It came out on Steam earlier this week, and it's sort of like a point-and-click adventure with sort of a Fallout kind of a vibe to it. The guy that made it, Chris Bischoff, him and his brother put it together. And it's very much a Fallout-esque exploration of a post-apocalypse South Africa, from what I understand.
So yeah.
Give him 6 months to
Three, maybe.
Jeez, guys. So when you say Fallout, so it's not newer Fallout. It's like Fallout 1 and 2.
Yeah, not the new 3D ones, but the top-down isometric ones. But 4K graphics, beautiful settings, quite a smart story, and even like a bit of combat involved, but it's more of sort of puzzle. It's more of a puzzle than it is like just regular RPG combat. I'd highly recommend you check it out. It's a South African production. It's only $117 on Steam at the moment. Full price $130. So grab it in the week of its special. But yeah, I'd highly recommend it.
And also, I just want to end off on that. It's not only available on Steam, it is also available on GOG.
Correct.
And the thing about buying it on GOG in the first week is that you'll also get a copy of Stasis, which was his previous game before this one. The thing is, it's just more expensive on GOG because they don't have regional pricing, so it's $20. For us in South Africa, if you want both games, it's cheaper to just buy both on Steam. But if you're overseas, you know, we don't know what your regional pricing is. So check that out on GOG and Steam. And then I'll just say up top, everything that we talk about today will be linked in the description. Now, Robin, you're going to tell us about yet another phone.
Yes. So as you may or may not know, MWC was meant to happen this week. But COVID-19 kind of saw to that.
That is the coronavirus, for anyone wondering.
Yeah. So it obviously scuppered a lot of plans for many manufacturers, one of which was Vivo, who were planning to show off a concept phone called the Apex 2020. And it's a little real pity that MWC is obviously cancelled, because to kind of see this phone in person would have been great, just kind of looking at the specifications. The kind of really interesting elements are that it has a curved front display, so kind of reminiscent of the Samsung Galaxy S.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've seen that before.
Yeah. So the kind of the phrasing that they use for it, they call it the full view edgeless design. But I was actually more interested in the fact that the selfie camera is actually hidden beneath the display.
So, and there's no notch or what's it called? Teardrop punch hole. That's the one that Samsung uses.
This is essentially a proper all screen device. But again, it's hard to talk about it purely for the fact that it's a concept phone. And also, we haven't seen it in the flesh.
What does that mean? They have no plans right now to make a real... Well, to make one that you can buy, not a real one, because it does exist.
Yeah, so unfortunately, because there was no MWC press conference, we have no idea.
We don't know.
We're hoping that perhaps something closer to IFA, which is usually in September this year, that they might be releasing something. But Vivo has done this before. They had the Apex 2019, but that never saw the light of day. There are a lot of great features and a lot of really premium specifications on the Apex 2020, so if they are planning to release it, it would be great. I think that the flagship phone market in general needs a bit of a shake-up.
Does it also have an under-screen fingerprint reader?
It does, yeah.
So it's got all the under-screen tape.
Everything's underneath.
So just to clarify from my side, when you say it's got a curved screen, how is it curved? Is it sort of is the screen itself concave? Edges are curved like this, like Samsung's.
It's exactly like. Gotcha. I still think that's a dumb feature. I've had a Galaxy. Well, not a Galaxy. Well, it is a Galaxy. I've had a Note for 2 years now, and I still have no idea why the curve is there.
Yeah, I think the problem for a lot of people is that the edges invariably you touched it incorrectly and brought up apps you didn't want them to.
Yeah.
So I'm not too sure if you've ever been a bit smart in terms of the UI and how that's handled.
Well, hopefully we'll see more about that soon. And I'm going to end off our quick news sections with Pokemon. I'm going to be maybe talking to myself because I think I'm the only one here who really gives a damn about Pokemon. But this is a bit interesting because it's not just Game Freak who did this. It was also a collaboration with Google. So they had a vote for Pokemon of the Year. And how this worked is if you did a Google search for just the word Pokemon or something related to it like Pokemon of the Year, there were a few key search terms. There was a little Google bar that came up that said, hey, do you want to vote in this? And you could vote every day. And basically, it asks you, what's your favorite Pokemon from each generation? And then they tallied all the votes and they said, what's your favorite Pokemon from all time? And for this year, it is Greninja. Now, that means nothing to you guys, but basically this might be like overall the favorite Pokemon ever, because a few years ago there was a similar vote for those in Japan only, and Greninja won as well. So people love this thing. It's basically a frog ninja. I don't know if either of you watched the Detective Pikachu movie. Okay, well, they're just shaking their heads.
Well, I do find it quite interesting that this list, that I think Pikachu is quite
low. Pikachu is low. Pikachu is the mascot of the series, and he was 19th. And Eevee, who they really tried to make a secondary mascot for the series when the Let's Go games came out, it was 20th. So...
Do you think they ever go with like a different mascot, like moving forward?
Well, I mean, they tried. Eevee, they tried to push Eevee pretty heavily for Let's Go. And
I mean, the fans have spoken, yes.
Yeah, they flipping want Greninja. So yeah, I'll put a list to all of these. There's nothing too out of the ordinary, except like there's a Pokemon called Chandelure, which is just exactly what it sounds like, a light fixture. And it came really high for some reason.
Sponsored by General Electric.
Yeah, and then there were three Pokemon from the new games that made it onto the list, which doesn't sound too... big, but it is, you know, that is 10% of the whole list, and those Pokemon are new. I think a lot of people are like, oh, we love the original Pokemon, and Charizard came fourth. So yeah, I'll put a link to all of that. Voting's now closed. The Pokemon doesn't win a prize or anything for coming first. It's just interesting to know.
Yeah, the only thing I can add to the Pokemon discussion, yes, is the only joke I know about it. How do you get Pikachu onto a bus?
New Pokemon. Yeah. Fluff, that one's been out for literal decades.
That's the only one I know, sorry.
So I'm going to keep blabbering about, because we're going to move on to the features section of the AfroCast. I'm going to talk about the Xbox One. So it's been insufferable on social media for the last few months, because there have been multiple rumors about how powerful the next consoles are going to be. So that's the Xbox Series X, still a terrible name, and the PlayStation 5, which is a great name because it's so simple. So Microsoft kind of said, we're tired of whatever that is. We're going to not reveal exactly what's inside of it, but we're going to reveal some numbers. And the big number, quote unquote, there is 12 teraflops. And the only time you ever hear the word teraflops is when we're talking about consoles. I don't know why. They can never just give us the speed of the GPU and the amount of RAM and the amount of memory. They're always like, oh, we got teraflops. Anyway, it is using AMD's Zen 2 and RDNA 2 architecture. And the big number that kind of caught a lot of people's eyes is that the Series X is four times more, in terms of processing power, it's four times as much as the original Xbox One. See, now we're getting all weird, because there's also the Xbox Series X. So compared to the Xbox One X, it's twice as powerful. It's so confusing. My Lord. I'll put a link to all of this. But basically, what it means for us is that there's going to be ray tracing, which is something that just hit the... Well, just... It's been on the PC scene for a few years now. It's been locked down to... What hasn't been locked down to NVIDIA? I think NVIDIA just does it best, because they have specific hardware set aside for doing ray tracing. If you try ray tracing with a non-RTX card, you just tank your performance, and you tank your performance with an RTX card, but not as much. The other thing that excites me as somebody who mainly plays on PC is support for 120 FPS. That's really exciting, because with the Xbox One X... they started really pushing for 60 FPS and sometimes 60 FPS at 4K. And something that, again, is exciting for me as a PC gamer is with the One X, again, that's the last gen console, they gave people the option, do you want the game to look better or do you want it to run better with more FPS? And even though I didn't have that console, if I did, I really like that ability to kind of switch between the two. The other exciting things here have to do with speed. So when both the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X were kind of teased, a lot of people were looking forward to solid state drive storage, because consoles have really slow storage. It's something that has been cursing them for a long time. They've got hard drives, and they've got hard drives that spin very slowly. So both of the new consoles are confirmed to be using solid state storage, and they didn't give much information about what kind of solid state storage we have or what the capacity is going to be at launch. this is going to be weird. I don't know what they're going to do, because console games are like 50 gigabytes minimum nowadays, and SSD storage is still quite expensive. So I don't know if they're going to be launching with, say, a 500 gigabyte model, and that's going to fill up with four games.
That's easy. Just sign up for our streaming service.
Yeah. Oh, I hope not.
Yeah.
And the other thing to do with speed is something called... Sorry, I'm just trying to find the flipping... every company needs their own special name for things. So there's a feature called Quick Resume. So what Quick Resume is basically a suspended state for multiple games, which means that you can pick them up and keep playing without needing to load them back into the memory, which is really exciting. So if you have two games that you switch between a lot, you can have them both in quick resume state, and then you can just jump in without exiting through the other, if you understand what I mean. Basically, again, to go back to PC, you have both games running in the back end, and then you just start the other one going again. But I assume they have some, you know, background architecture which makes the game that's not being played currently, they make it use less resources, because a console nowadays would explode if you try and play two games at once.
Okay, I think what excites me about this is the consoles have always been behind the PC curve. PCs have always loaded faster. They've looked better. They've, you know, achieved better frame rates. This very much puts consoles and PCs on the same... Well, it makes it a level playing field, really.
Yeah.
And I've been very happy with the performance of my Xbox One X. I love the fact that it does, you know, 4K at 30 frames a second on most games, 60 frames per second on like 1080p. Forza and whatnot. It's a very good console. And the fact that it's got, you know, the new ones have got double the speed is pretty exciting. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. The only thing that worries me, though, is I think there's been reports that the PlayStation 5, comparatively, it costs them $450 to manufacture.
Yeah, to make. Not even to sell, yeah. But the thing about that is that, so that's a rumor. Again, there's so many rumors. Aside from that rumor about how much it costs to make, the rumor right now is that the PlayStation 5 is going to be selling for $400. So it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be a loss for Sony. We have no idea how much the Xbox is going to sell for. And again, another rumor is that PlayStation hasn't revealed their hand yet about the exact processing power and the price, because they're waiting for Xbox. They're waiting for Xbox to announce the price. And then PlayStation would be like, oh, okay. We offering this console and it's going to cost slightly less. So again, go back to teraflops. The latest rumor at the time of recording is that the PlayStation 5 is 9.5 teraflops and the Xbox Series X is confirmed 12 teraflops. So it might be that we're going into a generation where the PlayStation 5 is noticeably less powerful. And I won't keep blabbering about this too much longer. I just want to mention Game Pass. So they have said that first-party titles from Microsoft will launch onto Xbox Game Pass on the same day that the regular game comes out. So the game they mentioned was Halo Infinite. If you buy Halo Infinite for $60 on launch day, I don't know why you would do that, because instead you could just buy yourself a subscription to Xbox Game Pass and you will get the game, not for free, because you're paying for the service. And they've also said, the last thing I want to mention, backwards compatibility. All Xbox One games and hardware will work on the Series X. And games that have been remastered for the Xbox One from the original Xbox and the Xbox 360 will now work on the Xbox Series X. So you will be able to play games backwards to the first Microsoft console if it supports that.
I quite like the hardware aspect of that, because if you spent quite a lot of money on an Elite controller, for example.
Yeah.
You don't have to start with
that. Yeah, I'm very happy about that. I mean, the games, of course, it's so nice to hear that we're not just going to leave everything behind like we did with each generation. But I read the games like, okay, we're going to have backwards compatibility. But then they said, hey, we're going to have backwards compatibility with hardware as well. And that's fantastic. I mean, a while ago, Microsoft made the, I can't remember, I think it was called the Adaptive Controller, which is for people with limited mobility. And if you have a setup that works for you right now, and that controller worked on PC as well, if you have that setup and you want to get the Series X, it's just plug and play. Yep, so it's looking very good. And even though I'm not an Xbox guy, even though I'm not a console guy, I'm really looking forward to this. And it seems like all the decisions they're making so far have been very consumer-friendly. And we'll have to see if PlayStation can keep up with that. And as we get to the end of the year, we'll have to see prices. How much do you think this is going to cost in South Africa?
Honestly, if it's less than 10 grand, I'll be surprised.
Exactly my thinking.
I'm going to say one human kidney.
Yeah. I think it might be 20. I'm not even joking. I think it might be 20K. I think it might be about $600 in the US, and I think by the time we get here, it's going to be $20,000.
Honestly, worst case scenario for me would be between 12 and 15. I don't know if it'll get as high as 20.
Yeah. In South Africa, PlayStation has a, I don't want to say a chokehold, but...
Well, no, we're a PlayStation region because they've been here for longer.
Yeah, South Africans love PlayStation.
Yeah.
And Xbox hasn't necessarily been more expensive. It's just that there's been lower... buying power, and that usually means they can, you know, they can not bargain. They can kind of make the prices a bit more competitive.
Yeah.
I think when this comes here, it's going to be close to 20 if it isn't 20 on
the nose. Depending on what the currency does. I mean, if it's edging towards 16 now, God knows what it's going to be doing in the next 6 months.
Maybe there'll be an apocalypse and we can get them cheap. Anyway.
One can hope.
Yeah. Dion, you're going to talk to us about AI, everybody's favorite scare. Word. Is that what you'd call it? Scare term?
Yeah, it's a bit of a, what do they call it? Technophobia. It's probably the technophobia of the moment. Look, having done a lot of reading around it lately, I'm not quite sure that technophobes are wrong. AI is an exciting technology, right? I mean, it has applications across every single industry, every single facet of human existence can benefit from some sort of application of AI. The technophobes are worried that AI is going to take over. It's going to realize humans are the enemy, and then it's going to nuke us with our own tools. This goes back years.
Yeah, it's always the Matrix and or the Terminator.
Terminator, correct. Yeah. Doing the reading that I've done so far, AI is not advanced enough that we're at the point where, you know, it's about to take over everything and nuke us with our own weapons. And rather, it's being applied in a whole lot of different industries in a lot of different ways. I mean, you know, there's AI looking at medical scans and making diagnoses more accurately than doctors can. I don't think it'll replace the doctors, but it'll kind of augment what the doctors are able to do. It's currently working on things like antibiotic-resistant strains of diseases and coming up with drugs or new drugs that can actually beat them. It's being applied in those kinds of fields to find things that humans are just missing because maybe they don't have sufficient data to work with. It's working in agriculture whereby farmers are using it in conjunction with sensors to increase the yields of their crops. You know, so it's got a lot of practical applications. And what everybody seems to be working towards is something called artificial general intelligence, which is an AI that can think like a human does, or like an AI that works like a brain does. NVIDIA is working on hardware that does this. Intel is working on hardware that does this. And I think it's inevitable we're going to reach a point where we're going to achieve an artificial general intelligence. What people are worried about is how that would be applied. And I think that is a genuine concern. I mean, we've had so many breakthroughs in so many different technological fields that have possibly been misused. I mean, let's just go back to the atom bomb. You know, we can split the atom and we can give everybody free energy, or we can make weapons that we can drop on other people's heads. And what did we do? You know, so I kind of think that there is a bit of a reason to be concerned. But companies like Microsoft are, you know, committing to developing artificial intelligence within a moral framework, you know, which would mean that they would prevent it from doing the kinds of things that people worry that it's going to do. We've all heard Elon Musk stepping up and going, he thinks AI needs a lot more regulation because if it's just left to develop on its own, it could indeed lead to these apocalyptic scenarios. So there are sort of voices of reason within artificial intelligence that should head this stuff off at the pass, but, you know, whether it will ultimately remains to be seen. But just purely from a technical standpoint, from a geeky standpoint, artificial intelligence is super exciting. Applying a greater intelligence than we have to more data than we can fathom to come up with interesting insights is a good use of such a technology. But
so what's your thoughts on, another concern, which is around bias, especially when these AI tools are being developed?
Yeah, so that comes up a lot in AI that's going to be handling self-driving cars. I don't know if you guys saw one of the universities put out I don't know what you'd call it. It was like a survey where it gives you choices and then it asks you, what should an AI do? So some of them were ridiculous. Like, you're going down the street and you have to get into an accident between two groups of people and the car has to decide which way to swerve.
Oh, that's like an age-old ethics.
Yeah, it's called the trolley. It's the trolley problem.
Yeah.
But then they give them parameters. Like, one of them is, an ex-convict who's in school to become a lawyer or something like that, and the other one is like a school child who's a delinquent. So which one should the car hit?
Well, you don't know the
information. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a thought experiment, because at some point a self-driving car is going to have an accident and it needs to know, should it swerve left or should it swerve right? And then there's the whole other thing where if you're going to get into an accident with a pedestrian, does the car try and save its passenger or passengers, or does it try and save the pedestrian and maybe kill the passenger? And a few of them have come out and said, we're going to try and save the passenger because they paid for the car. Yeah, because a lot of times, like, if I'm not mistaken, but in South Africa, pedestrians always have the right of way, even if they're like illegally jaywalking. Mm-hmm. So in South Africa, if you bring a self-driving car, is it going to obey that? Because does it know the local laws that you always have to swerve, yeah, or you have to try and avoid hitting a jaywalker or somebody in the street?
So my personal feeling on this, having done all the reading that I've done, is AI is going to a large extent, bring humanity face to face with itself. It's going to make us confront what it is we believe, what it is we want. And I think humanity has flaws, and I think AI is going to amplify flaws, and at least initially, until we, you know, learn how to actually curb that.
Yeah.
So I think there was a thing, Amazon was using AI within HR to identify desirable candidates, and it revealed a massive sort of sexist bias towards men, saying men are more desirable employees than women are. Obviously, this is a bias that needs correction, but it's the kind of thing that's coming out at the moment.
I think also when it comes to AI, especially when you're training a tool, the sample size you're using just simply isn't big enough. So yes, there might be an inherent bias in the actual developer, but they're just not looking at a big enough sample to actually get...
Look, I'm sure these are things that we're going to get around, but at the moment, these are the problems that are being flagged up. So just to round it all off, I have hope that AI is going to be applied in really awesome ways that will really help humanity move forward well. At the same time, I do worry that there are risks and they're not unfounded. We just need to figure out our way through that minefield.
So you're still prepping your bunker in the meantime?
Yeah, I'm hoping for the best, but I'm expecting the worst, to be honest.
Do you guys want to hear a big brain play over here? So think about this. Can you consider something true AI if it doesn't have bias? Because the whole way we look at AI is how closely can it think for itself? And is a human or a machine that can't think of itself completely unbiased? No. Every human has bias, right?
Right.
So if you make a thinking machine and it doesn't have bias, can you say it's a thinking machine?
Well, the AI is meant to be better than a human, right?
Meant
so,
to be.
So you think true actual AI will be a thinking machine without bias?
Yes, but I don't think that can ever be truly developed. Well, at least at this stage anyway.
Yeah. Although they're looking at AIs that develop other AIs, and there's some scary stuff. Like two AIs, it was Facebook actually, just incidentally, it was Facebook. They developed two AIs that started talking to each other initially in English, but the AIs then realized English was inefficient and they started communicating in their own language, which the researchers didn't understand, and they were like, oh, this is bad, let's pull the plug.
Yeah, machines are making machines.
Yeah.
What's that old, it's the old creepypasta where the last two entities in the world will be two chatbots speaking to each other endlessly. Like two pieces of malicious software that are trying to advertise fake sex sites, being like, hey, are you in my area? Hey, are you in my area? And they're just going to keep looping. So scary stuff aside, we're going to end off today with Robin. He's talking about some Huawei stuff.
Yeah, I guess this could also be scary, depending on how you view it.
Depending if you work for Huawei.
Yeah, so we've been writing a bit about Huawei in recent weeks, and we got the chance to chat with Huawei's local representatives and executives around Huawei Mobile Services, also known as HMS. So as you probably know, Huawei in the United States aren't exactly the best of buds at the moment, and as a result, Google Play Services hasn't been made available from devices from the Huawei Mate 30 Pro and on. So in, I guess, the interim, or rather as a countermeasure, Huawei are now developing HMS as their answer to a lack of Google mobile services on their devices. So essentially, instead of going to a Play Store, you'd go to what Huawei called the App Gallery. And for a lot of apps, it does have, an alternative, or rather a counterpart. A lot of popular apps in South Africa, say a lot of fintech and banking apps, they have versions of those available in the App Gallery. But there are elements that they don't have. So there are a few workarounds. Say, for example, something like, and I guess a lot of them are kind of linked to Google stuff. So, for example, YouTube, for example. That's something you won't be able to find in the app gallery. But you can, for example, find a third player option, a third party option, or a...
It's an unofficial app that accesses the YouTube API usually.
Yeah, and you can also, for example, use your web browser and access YouTube from that. Which, again, these are easy enough workarounds, but at the end of the day, is that what a consumer wants to have to deal with?
I mean, the best way to describe it is whenever you buy, usually a phone from China, you get their own branded versions. You don't get Google Chrome. They'll just call it something like web browser. Instead of Gmail, you'll just get something called mail client, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the issue with that was, and I guess a lot of it was classed as like bloatware and a lot of duplicated apps. Those could be circumvented by simply going to the Play Store and getting what you wanted. This is not really an option anymore. So I think it's going to be a really critical time for Huawei just in terms of how they manage expectations for consumers, because the last thing you have to want to deal with, especially if you're not tech savvy, is APIs or having to check out a app before you download it for any potential risks. And Huawei has some tools built in to kind of assist in that regard, but again, how that impacts the end user experience is going to be quite interesting to see, because at the moment HMS has been made available to developers, and we've always had a big push, especially locally, in terms of bringing developers on board, getting a lot of apps on board. But HMS 4.0, if I remember correctly, that's going to be launching alongside the next flagship Huawei device. So this week they showcased the Huawei Mate XS, which is the updated version of their foldable phone. That will be running HMS 4. And then next month they're launching the new P series, which will probably be the first new Huawei device that lands in South Africa, and that will be running HMS 4. So it will be an interesting time, purely for the fact that the P series, at least in recent years, has really helped Huawei kick off very strong financial years. So again, it's I don't want to use the word interesting too much, but it is going to be a really intriguing time in terms of what the consumer reaction is to HMS, how Huawei kind of educates consumers at the retail point, and also in the long term, whether people are willing to deal with workarounds, deal with APIs, and deal with potential risks with using third-party apps and stuff like that. So, yeah, Huawei thinks that HMS is the answer, and a rather interesting element that their CEO, Richard Yu, mentioned during the presentation of the Mate XS was the fact that Huawei still wants to be a part of the Android ecosystem. So he never said it explicitly, but reading through the lines, it seems like if, for example, the US decides to quell its campaign against Huawei and Google's allowed to essentially bring Huawei back into the Android fold, Huawei would be open to that. And I think that might be the best move, especially as there's going to be a lot of growing pain when it comes to HMS. So, yeah, if you're eyeing a Huawei phone in 2020, just be aware of the fact that HMS is going to be your solution as opposed to Google Play services.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a bit of a transition period. They're probably going to take a bit of pain while people get used to the new way of doing things. I do think ultimately their appeal is going to come down to the quality of the handsets themselves, because that'll then make people go, well, look, let me put up with whatever because I get a really good phone in return. And we'll just have to see what happens, I guess.
I think there's going to be a lot of problems with people who aren't up to speed on all of this, go and buy a new phone, and then they start it up. And either immediately there, they see, hey, this is an Android, or down the road, they're like, hey, I want to download YouTube. I can't find YouTube. There must be something defective. And then they have to take it back to the store, and some poor person who's just trying to live their lives working retail has to explain to them trade embargoes and the fact that they can't have Android and this is something else, but it's maybe just as good. And man, I really feel for those people, because that's going to be a hard day at the office trying to explain that.
Yeah, so specifically with regard to that element, at the HMS briefing, Huawei said that they're going to be increasing their presence at essentially every single retail space that Huawei has.
I think they're going to have to.
And they're going to have this interesting program where once you've purchased a newer Huawei device, someone's going to contact you and say, do you need assistance setting up?
Oh, my God. Do you know what I thought you were going to say? I thought they were going to set up booths where they'd be like, here's our old phone that's running Android. Here's the new one that's running our new OS. Which one do you prefer? And it would be like those blind taste tests that Pepsi used to do, where they're like, do you think this is Coke or Pepsi? Like, oh, well, I preferred this one. It must be Coke. They're like, ah, oh, gotcha, it's Pepsi. So I can imagine where they bring people in and they have... I can see this happening in a year or two if it is still like this. We have an advert. They're like, we gave people the old operating system and our new one, and we see which one. And they don't use the word Android because you can't do that in South African advertising. Like, they preferred ours every single time. I can see that happening. I'm going to be Nostradamus if that happens. But I think that's going to wrap up the AfriCast for this week. So for myself, for Robin, and for Dion.
Cheers, everyone.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.